Hi guys, today Paul Perez from the Improve and Have Fun podcast and I discuss the controversial history between Coke and Pepsi. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Reseller Niche Podcast, a show for e-commerce buyers and sellers where we investigate unique items being bought and sold and show you how research equals knowledge equals profit.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Reselling Niche Podcast. I'm here with my main man, Paul, and he is there in the background. He'll be here in a second. How's it going, Lone Star Picker? There we go.
All right.
So today we're going to be talking about Coke versus Pepsi. Kind of a mix of conspiracy theory and, well, just generally our experiences growing up with, being 80s kids, we remember a lot of what went down. So how are you, Paul? How is it going?
Well, Mo, today is No Hat Tuesday because you don't have your hat on, your traditional Tuesday hat, you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is cool because we get to see your beautiful hair for sure.
It's getting warmer, man. I get cold easily, so I have a beanie or a hat on.
Absolutely.
Not today.
Absolutely. Feeling good. It's sunny out here in New Jersey on the East Coast, and you could definitely feel the spring coming, and I'm excited because, it's nice to get outside and get some vitamin D, some sunny D, and I don't mean the sugary drink, definitely.
Exactly. And we can get into that, too, on another day. But give everyone a background. First of all, I always forget this. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Thank you, Mo. Again, my name is Paul V. Perez. The name of my podcast is called the Improve and Have Fun Podcast, where I work on improving myself while having fun along the way with the hopes of encouraging others to do the same. And happy to be here with you, Mo, on this Tuesday. You can find all my content at approveandhavefun.com.
Excellent. Now, today's topic, I got to say, it was picked by Paul, and it was a good one. So, Paul, you want to kind of give them an idea about what we might be talking about here a little bit, a little backstory on today's podcast?
I'll be happy to, Mo. And once again, Lone Star Picker, big up to you. Lone Star Picker in the building, definitely. And, okay, so today we are going to be talking about Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, but with a heavy emphasis on Coca-Cola and their history and the big to-do in the 80s, and also some conspiracies surrounding specifically Coca-Cola during the 80s. So, Mo and I, if you've been following us here on Tuesdays, we definitely lean heavy on 80s nostalgia and kind of the things that we grew up with. And this is another facet of that.
Oh yeah, big time. From a reseller's perspective, I know we don't touch on that much, is I sell a lot of Coke and Pepsi type products, shirts, stuff like that too. So all this stuff, this is really about two, I shouldn't even call them companies. It's like more than a company for each of these. And, we've all heard of, Coke versus Pepsi, and we'll touch on the different competitions they had. But if we didn't, why don't we take it back all the way to the beginning when they started? Because I believe Coke started first or opened up first for business, if I'm not mistaken. And we're going all the way back here. What was the year exactly? I'm guessing it was 18. Let me see here. How early did they get started? That would be an interesting one to look up, because when I think of Coke now, and then we think of more of like, it's not even like a company, like I said, it's like
an American institution.
Exactly. Because I always thought it was funny that Coke, just the word, they're able to market that, copyright that word Coke, because it's Pepsi Cola. And I guess technically the drink is cola, but I always thought that was very smart of them. And maybe they didn't even think about it when they named themselves Coke and Pepsi. Because Coca-Cola, and then it's Pepsi Cola. So, and they kind of go back and forth on that, the whole naming thing, New Coke, Old Coke, and all that too. But
we're gonna dig into that for sure. But in terms of the history of Coca-Cola, it was started originally by Colonel John Pemberton. I'm reading this right off of Wikipedia, who was wounded in the American Civil War and was addicted to morphine. Also had a medical degree and began a quest to find the substitute for the problematic drug. In 1885, at Pemberton's Eagle Drug and Chemical House's drugstore in Columbus, Georgia, he registered Pemberton's French wine, Coca, nerve tonic. Pemberton's tonic may have been inspired by the formidable success of Vin Mariani, a French Corsican coca wine, but his recipe additionally included the African cola nut, the beverage's source of caffeine. So he was, like it said here, he had a morphine addiction. He was back in the 1800s, the late 1800s. It was all about like tonics and like this miracle drug that could cure jaundice and it could cure addiction and stuff like that. Like, excuse me. One of the things that they talked about, and we're going off of the Conspiracy Theory podcast, which you can find on Spotify. Mo, I'm sure you'll leave a link.
Yeah, we're going to put that in the show notes so you can.
You know, like this is the basis of our research here, definitely. And back in the day, in that time, like I said, the late 1800s, even ketchup was thought of as a miracle drug to clear up jaundice and stuff like that, which is ridiculous today, of course, you know what I mean? But it was all about like tonics and, you know, like snake oil salesmen. I'm not saying that that was his intention, but so he wanted to find a way to go ahead and help with his morphine addiction. And there was this French kind of like drink. It was like, I think wine and something else, but he added, like it says here, the African cola nut to go ahead and give it the caffeine. You know, what ended up happening is he tried to market this product and he tried to push it out and he didn't have much success. He ended up having to sell it to another gentleman who was the one who took it full on. And I'll let you continue from there, Mo.
Oh yeah. And because I was talking about the name a little bit, this is from foodandwine.com. It says the Coca-Cola is not just a catchy name. When it first launched, the cola's key ingredients were cola leaves. So the plant that cocaine derived from. So this is a little bit, we're going to talk about a little bit about this also. And though the companies, obviously they've removed kind of the cocaine supposedly, and actually nobody, unless it's on the federal end, knows the exact ingredients of Coca-Cola, because I believe it's proprietary information. But supposedly the rumor is, I lost you there for a second.
No, I had my mic muted. I'm sorry. Okay. The recipe is like, you know, like, yeah, like a secret for yes, for Coca-Cola for a long time.
It was to the point where I believe, I don't know if it was the 70s or the 80s, but I think it was in India, because there were because they're vegetarian, a lot of them there, and then they were trying to sue to make sure that there was nothing out of the ordinary in the product. I don't know how that worked out, to be honest. I should look that up. But
That you're saying that even questions like, why did they even have to go do that?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like why did that even come to the point of like, wait, we got to try to make a law to make sure that, there's nothing extra in there.
Yeah, exactly. And then even like, for example, Coca-Cola. So if we're talking about the ingredients here, part of their ingredients that we know of includes something, an extract from the coca leaf, which they actually don't own the rights to. It's a company called the Steppen Company. They're out of New Jersey.
That was there a big go. Old, yeah. Yeah. Keep on going, Mo. I'm sorry. You're making me smile. You're talking about it. Yeah.
So I'm probably butchering the story, but this, you know, this is all, like we said, from podcast and, you know, different pages we've read. So anyway, so this company called the Steppen Company. And I believe the thing is that they can only sell or use the coca leaf in certain ways or to certain companies, because this is all a federal thing. Anything to do with even remote traces of like drugs, cocaine, and so forth, they have to be regulated. So only certain companies can buy and sell, for example. So the Steppen Company is actually the one that owns the rights to that leaf. So
they don't own the rights to the leaf, because it's like a natural kind of plant. They have legal authority They have a legal authority to actually like buy it and then, you know, do the decoconation process, whatever it's called, basically to strip the cocaine from it, but use the leaves because the leaves still have some of it in there. So Pepsi and this Stepan company, they have some legal authority by the U.S. government to go ahead, you know, because it's a controlled substance. You know what I'm saying? So they can't just like, you know, they can't just grab the cocaine out of it and, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So they have the legal authority to go ahead and a portion, some of it, like to buy these cocaine leaves and, you know, use a process to go ahead and strip out the majority of the cocaine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's all kind of like very kind of like hush hush, very, you know, government level stuff. Because it even says the plant is the only commercial entity in the United States authorized by the Drug Enforcement Administration to import coca leaves. So exactly, they import them, which is primarily from Peru via the National Coca Company. So that's what they kind of work in conjunction with the Stepan Company and do that. So
now, in talking about, like, we're jumping all over the place here, but now, once again, getting back to the history of Coca-Cola, it's a wild history in the sense of, so Doc Pemberton was the one who originally, you know, found this original formula, which wasn't 100% yet. It did not have, like, the cocaine in it or anything like that yet. But then there was this other gentleman who brought it from him, and he's the one that kind of, like, you know, shot like a rocket into the stratosphere because of like his marketing, his adding the little bit of cocaine leaf, you know, into the recipe, and also bottling it because, you know, you can only get it by fountains originally. But this other gentleman, I'm going to get his name, was the one who, I guess, brought the recipe from John Pemberton, and he found a way to bottle it, and the sales, they blew up, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, so let's see here. Okay, invented by John Pemberton, and bought by Asa Griggs Candler.
Yes, that's the gentleman. That's the gentleman who went ahead and brought the recipe, and he's the one that kind of it took off after that, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and he was kind of like the marketing. He's more of a marketing guy, from what we heard. So he, you know, he came up with, I believe he came up with the logo and all that kind of stuff, and he kind of took it to another level from there.
Absolutely.
And then
wanted to go ahead and also shout out Carolina Drifter, Casey, Yakov Benz, and Marrakesh 7, also all in the building. Thank you for being here with us.
That's right. Got Seattle and NYC in the building. How's it going? And Austin, I believe. Austin, Texas. So cool. Thank you guys for being here. So yeah, this one is it's you go ahead. You sound like you had something to say there.
Oh, also, like I said, we're just jumping around, but in the past, Coca-Cola has also had Nazi ties, and it's also been tied to racism as well. There was a whole thing where, so they were adding some coca leaf into when the other gentleman, Mr. Chandler, took over the, you know, Coke, and like he started to bottle it. He started to kind of get it out, and sales started to like explode. And it was promoted, and it still is. Like when you think Coca-Cola to this day, like it's like an American institution. It's a part of the American fabric, and this is how it was promoted. You know, how Coca-Cola was tied to racism. Basically, there was news during the early 1900s that Coca-Cola was making black people sexually assault folks. So Mr. Chandler, he was a racist, and he didn't like, they didn't want black folks drinking so that, you know, Coca-Cola, you know what I mean? So he went ahead and found the process to like kind of take out the cocaine out of, or just mostly take out the cocaine of Coca-Cola during that time, so that this wouldn't happen. And it was just, this was a thing that was geared towards black people. And according to the podcast that we were listening to, like I said, he was a racist. He could not have that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think because at the time what was happening was like when Coca-Cola first started out, it wasn't the first, obviously, drink. And a lot of it started out as, like Paul said, medicinal purposes. Like they talked about the cocaine being something that would help you. And they even talked about the idea that, like, the whole term rattlesnakes or snake salesman came from people that would take a rattlesnake and use it and take something from that and turn it into a medicine. So that's, I think, with Chandler's thing, is he moved it more kind of away from being a medicinal thing to a popular drink. And he took it to another level with his marketing. But at the same time, he did it for his, we'll say, different reasons. But yeah, it was, yeah, go ahead.
And also, just like in terms of how it was tied to like Nazi Germany, you know, Coca-Cola at one point really started to blow up. So they started to get plants. They started to have plants of Coca-Cola, like, in different parts of the world. And one of the places was in Germany, and it sold really well in Germany. But even as the war raged on, I think it was World War II. I forget. I don't know if it was World War I or World War II.
I believe it was World War II.
As World War II raged on, they continued, like, selling their products. This American company continued selling their products in Germany because they were, you know, they were cool. Their products, they sold over there and stuff like that. Until I think when the U.S. got involved, then they cut ties with their bottling company over there. But then, surprisingly, a byproduct of that was the people who worked at this German plant, they ended up creating Fanta. And Fanta ended up becoming like a drink, you know what I'm saying? Where after the war was over, Coca-Cola went ahead and purchased Fanta, and like they just kind of like brought them right back into the fold, definitely.
And the thing, the way they described Coke's, the way they went about it is they worked with, you know, some nefarious characters, you know, the Nazis. They described them as not being part of that movement, but at the same time, happily engaging in business with them. So it was kind of justified, I guess, in a sense, on the, by the dollar. Like, we can make enough money. We can make a lot of money doing this. So, but like Paul said, once the U.S., you know, got involvement in World War II, those ties were cut. And then from that led to Fanta. So it's kind of a weird kind of ride. They don't hide the fact that they were part of that. I mean, it, you know, it's common knowledge. But at the same time, I don't think they had, like, I don't know what the packaging was like. I'd be interested to see what the packaging was like in Germany. That I haven't seen. But
in the podcast, even in this particular, like, podcast that we were that we listened to for research, they even said that Hitler, like, it was one of his favorite drinks, like Coca-Cola was. You know what I mean? It's crazy. But, like, now getting into some of the history of Pepsi, right? So Pepsi was started around the period of the Great Depression, where it started up twice, like it went into bankruptcy twice. And because it was just trying to be an upstart, trying to go ahead and compete against Coca-Cola. It even tried to sell itself to Coca-Cola during one of these bankruptcies. They, you know, Coca-Cola didn't want them. So what Pepsi ended up doing is they started to go ahead and market and sell. Like, once again, this is during the Great Depression. They started to sell cheaper and they started to market themselves to black folks. And it was just like, you know, the sales started to, like, increase and started to go crazy. And the public and, you know, some of the public gave them a little bit of pushback because, like, you know, at that time there was definitely, like, racism was a little bit more blatant. So there was definitely some pushback, but Pepsi embraced this marketing and they went with it. They were like, they're buying our product and we're going to make ads with black folks in them. You know what I mean? And the story of Pepsi is an interesting one. I mean, the story of both of these things is very interesting because it's tied to marketing and how they went ahead and pushed these products to people. But as we're going to continue the story, like, Pepsi, once again, their marketing is incredible because of the way they came from to where they got to. It was astounding, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing about Pepsi is, like Paul said, the comparison they made is the Netflix Blockbuster one, which we ironically talked about last time. But I think it was a little bit more than that. These guys are behemoths. I mean, still to this day, obviously. So with Pepsi, it looks like they started back in 1893, failed pretty miserably. It was Caleb Bradham And then again, it actually wasn't called Pepsi. It was called Brad's Drink. So, I mean,
original.
So then it was renamed to Pepsi Cola in 1898 and then shortened to Pepsi only in 1961, which is surprising to me. But I guess, you know, it still says Pepsi. But anyway, so Brad's Drink failed in 1898. It went to Pepsi. And I believe, like Paul said, in the third around the Great Depression, 1923, Pepsi Cola entered bankruptcy in large part due to financial losses and then fluctuating sugar prices as a result of World War I. Now, Pepsi at that time didn't have the ties that Coca-Cola did to, you know, national government. And it was a much smaller company. So, Paul's point about making a product that was cheaper, they were the, you know, the bargain basement. And then obviously they marketed themselves to other, you know, groups and like African Americans and as much as possible, because they were grasping for straws at that point. So, and it even says on three occasions, Coca-Cola was offered Pepsi. 1922, 1933, and another time. And each time it was Coke that declined and said, no, we're not good. Even up till 1933. So imagine if there was only one. I mean, I'm guessing it would have been something else. But anyways.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. But now, like, jumping a few years into the future from there, marketing, again, like during the 50s and the 60s, when there was a lot of there was a 60s and 70s, let's say 50s, 60s and 70s. There was definitely a changing of the guard in the way Americans thought, and the traditional house and the picket fence. Like, times were changing and there was a lot of protests. And Pepsi, once again, they grabbed onto that and they went ahead and promoted their product to young people. Like, this is the drink of the young people, and the young people, like, they're, you know, revolutionaries and this and that, and they were advertising themselves in that vein. So this is as well, was their popularities continued to increase and increase and increase. So it's kind of like Pepsi was always marketing to the folks that maybe you wouldn't think of marketing to, you know what I'm saying? And this is kind of where they build up that grassroots, and they kind of, it's kind of like the whole thing of something being forbidden. If I tell you like this thing that you've always had now is forbidden, you're going to still seek it out because it has this extra value. I mean, I'm sure like that's a tie into reselling somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
What I was going to say is that about marketing, on a side note here, this is going back to 1885. There's a Spanish drink called Cola Coca that was actually around, presented in Philadelphia in 1885, before the official birth of Coca-Cola. And in 1953, Coca-Cola bought the rights to the drink. So there's nothing going on. But back to Paul's point about marketing, it seems to me that Coca-Cola's whole marketing approach, especially back pre-1980s, was very nationalistic, we're going after bigger established groups of people, as opposed to Pepsi's. For example, in the 30s, Pepsi sees the rise of radio, you know, public radio, you know, radio stations. They kind of attach themselves to that a little bit. They try to push themselves to kids, dance clubs, I don't know what you call them, like that music, that kind of thing, as opposed to Coca-Cola is like, we're the American way. We're the, you know.
Again, and piggybacking, don't forget your point, Mo. I want you to continue your point. Like the whole thing, even to this day, where Coca-Cola promotes Santa Claus and like this, you know, white Santa Claus on their bottles and everything. And that's totally, they've been doing that for a century now almost. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Yeah. This is a kind of just leaning in on your point, Mo, in terms of Coca-Cola being like this national pride product.
And
it's marketed that way. It's marketed that way. It's not even a thing.
It is. It's totally marketed that way. And I was surprised that, because I'm looking at the colors of the Pepsi and a Coke. Pepsi, they went after Coke, obviously. They got the red and white. They added the blue, though, which is surprising. I would have thought with Coke's kind of very American feel, they would have added blue in there somewhere. But, you know, at the same time, you know, they're not going to change it, you know, 100 years down the road. But, moving forward, if we move forward a little bit, if you move forward to, say, the 60s and the 70s, I think you see an increase, obviously, in, you know, revenue sharing between Coke and Pepsi. So Pepsi kind of gained a little bit of ground. They weren't like they were back in the 30s and the 40s. And then you see kind of a difference in, like, I think they talked about in the 70s, you saw a difference in how Pepsi was, how Coke was looking at their marketing schemes. Now, this is before we're going to talk about new Coke and old Coke and all that. But it's more of, let me see, I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Hold on. I wanted to add something while you get in that mode. Speaking about the 60s and 70s, now I had mentioned before that, you know, Coke has had its hands kind of like with maybe governments that aren't in the same alignment as the U.S. government. But Pepsi has kind of done something similar, that during the Red Scare, during the 60s and 70s, Pepsi had a plant or a place that they get like a lot of their supplies in Chile.
Yeah.
Now, what ended up happening was there was a socialist kind of election happening, and socialist, communist, they said socialist on the podcast, where there was going to be a gentleman who was going to be elected, that he would have taken over all agriculture, and that would have affected Pepsi's bottom line.
Yeah.
So what Pepsi ended up doing is placing a call to the president of the United States, and then a small time after, the United States had supplied this anti-socialist movement armaments, basically, and there was a coup, and they took out this socialist leader. And you're like, how can this be proven true? Like, according to this podcast we were listening to, there was the ambassador to Chile, like, had confirmed this some years later. So Pepsi basically used their influence with the United States government to go ahead and take out more or less someone who's going to affect their bottom line. So it's just kind of this whole thing where you see like these big corporations and lobbyists and putting all this money into like trying to get their thing and their agenda in. And this is like a real life example of that. And it's crazy. Like I said, this history of these companies is crazy, but we haven't even gotten into the 80s yet. But Mo, I just wanted, if you wanted to elaborate or go back to your point.
No. My main thing, I guess, that's an awesome point, because it was, like I said, now Pepsi's kind of taking on a role that Coke had had for 50 or 70 years. And they're, you know, more than a nationwide country. You're talking about having a worldwide influence and having, actually, in that case, they had more of an influence than the U.S. government did. It felt like it, because, that's now it's at the point where governments are actually talking directly to Pepsi and Coke over other governments, which is ridiculous. So then, I mean, if we move forward from there, when we talk about a head-to-head challenge, because at this point, you're talking about Coke versus Pepsi. They obviously didn't know who each other are, U.S., but the rest of the world. So then 1975, we got something called the Pepsi Challenge, which maybe you guys have heard of. I remember, and I believe this went on for a while. So it was a marketing campaign on TV. But according to this, it said, let me see, it was started with a skiing event sponsored by Pepsi area in Minnesota. And then, so the challenge originally took form of a single blind taste test. Funny thing is, in the podcast, and this is, they do a pretty good job of this, they talk about go ahead.
No, I was just saying that you're coming in and out a little bit, you know?
Okay, sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. A blind taste test. And what they did, which was smart, was Pepsi would give a very, very tiny little sample, because Pepsi's known to have more of a sugary taste, more sugar content. And from what they gathered in their research, most people liked the taste of, or they felt like it, they liked Pepsi over the taste of Coke, especially in small samples. Is they would give you a tiny little sample of Coke and a tiny little sample of Pepsi. And from what they gathered, I don't know if this is 100% scientific or not, or if they, you know, maybe added to their numbers a little bit, but they took from that Pepsi was more popular than Coke, and they went, that was their like big marketing campaign for, I want to say, a good 10 years, 75 to maybe the mid 80s, somewhere in there. And then, so with, it even talks about it, Pepsi representatives said one containing Pepsi, one containing Coke, and shoppers are encouraged to taste both colas and then select which one they prefer. So I'm sure you saw that. They had commercials all over. Even I think they had it on Saturday morning cartoons that we used to watch. And they had the Pepsi taste test. They had celebrities. I'm trying to think of which celebrities they had. Let me see here. It doesn't even talk about that. But let me see.
I was going to jump in and piggyback on your point there, Mo. Okay. So Pepsi, like I said, Coke was still number one for a long time. But when they started to introduce the sip test, like you said, Mo, this is when Pepsi took off, because at the time, their recipe was a little bit sweeter. Also, a big marketing push. Like I said, I think the marketing is what really just determines. And I guess it comes down to the flavor too, like who likes like kind of more sugar, right?
Yeah.
But the sip test was huge, because the sip test is what kind of pushed Pepsi beyond Coke for a time. And also, they paid out the biggest ever like kind of celebrity endorsement when they paid Michael Jackson in 1985 to go ahead and be, you know, and endorse their product. And this also, if anyone can remember, any of my 70s babies, or I don't know if the 80s babies can remember this, this is when Michael Jackson had filmed that video for Pepsi and he burned his hair.
Yeah.
And that was all over the news. But, you know, they were worried about, like, is Michael Jackson going to sue us? Is he going to, like, you know, shit talk us? I'm sorry if I'm cursing more. I don't know if we could curse or not. I forget. But then Michael Jackson was like, look, it's just like kind of dope. Make a donation to this kind of clinic or to this hospital, like to build a burn unit or something like that. And I'll continue working with you. But that combination, Michael Jackson was the hottest thing during the 80s. This sip test is what pushed Pepsi past Coke for one of the first times ever in history in terms of sales.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I believe it lasted for a while there. I want to say from like the mid 80s to night. They, I mean, I'm not talking about dwarfing their sales, but they went ahead. And Pepsi, we'll talk about a little bit, they were running up to, from, there's different, varying different stories about this. Pepsi came about in the 1880s. So by the mid 1990s, you have copyright laws. So once you hit 100 years, your property or your proprietary products are no longer proprietary, I believe. So the rumor, we'll just say they brought it, I believe it was 1985, they brought out new Pepsi, new Coke. And then, they go into it in great details, and there's multiple conspiracy theories about this. One of them is that they needed to adjust the taste of Coke and get people to use, basically so they could use a new formula and not lose their proprietary hold on the formula for Coke. So they bring out new Coke. And for years, it was talked about as a big flop, this and that, how it led to the demise of people drinking Coke and this and that. But in the podcast, they kind of differ from that a little bit. They kind of talk about how it was all planned. I believe it was all done within a year of them hitting the 100-year mark of the company. So they bring out new Coke, and they still have original Coke. So I think for...
I did want to correct you, Mo.
Okay.
So they did not have new... The old Coke recipe... When they released new Coke, they stopped selling the old Coke recipe. They were only pushing new Coke. And also, one little tidbit we forgot to mention was, so Pepsi was the one to first come out with a diet Pepsi. And that was already tasting sweeter. And then this is, so a combination of the celebrity endorsement, the sip test, this diet Pepsi, like that was already tasting even sweeter already than the regular Pepsi. This was all pushing Pepsi up, up, up. This is what pressured Coke to go ahead and try to, like, and the way that they came to this new flavor It's over a three-year period. They did a ton of SIP tests, and they were going ahead and like every time they would get like new mark R and like research and development, like they would take like the information for the people doing these SIP tests. They supposedly, according to the podcast, did over 200,000 SIP tests in a three-year period, and they gleaned information from that, and they continued to fix the recipe until they came to New Coke, and they pushed New Coke. And they stopped selling the old recipe for a period of time. But I just wanted to add that.
No. When was it? Because I believe for a time they had them side by side. When did they do that?
When they released New Coke, they stopped selling the old Coke. And it was selling well. People were still buying it because people are habituated to buying Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
But what started to happen is, people started to make a stink about it. They started to sign petitions. On the late night talk shows, they started to talk about how the new Coke and is like a goofy flavor. Like basically, it was popular to make fun of new Coke, and that's when the sales started to decline. So about 2.5 months after they started to sell them, they brought old Coke back and they started to sell them side by side.
Gotcha. Okay. Hi guys, shameless plug section here. We'd love to have you join our reselling group called the Reseller Niche Help Group on Facebook. A lot of great resellers there. Also, if it's possible, if you could leave us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, you can find these podcasts in video form on YouTube. We'd love to have you join us there so you can see some of the products we go through and see some of the people we're interviewing. And if you could possibly subscribe, that would be the kicker. Thanks so much for listening. Because I'm trying to think of just personal memories of the taste of Coke now compared to what it was back in the 80s. I'm not sure if you could even, do you even remember what that tasted like back then? Or
I'm not a regular soda drinker in my adult life, so not really. But according to the conspiracy theories, what you were talking about before, conspiracy theories around this were that Coke did this intentionally to go ahead and a bunch of different reasons to go ahead and potentially take out all the Coke. These are like two or three conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Whether they're true or not, different story. But whether they purposely did this to go ahead and raise the desire from the consumer to go ahead and buy old Coke again, because when they released that old Coke, then the sales went bonkers. And that's when they went past Pepsi again. But it's kind of like problem, reaction, solution. So the problem, we release new Coke. It sells well for a time. It's popular to make fun of it. The reaction, everybody goes bonkers. They don't like it. Solution, let's re-release old Coke again, and then the sales, because the people were missing it. And this was only like 2.5 months after the release of new Coke. And then the sales went crazy again because everybody was like, it's a national institution. Like people were like, really? It's kind of like you really like hurt people. Like, and people were like, this was the reaction from the American public. Like, how can you take away this American institution? I was like, what? It's a food. Exactly. It was like, you know, but their marketing is so incredible and is so ingrained, and they have history and tradition and like, you know, that people were just going bonkers. Like I keep using the word bonkers. People were going crazy that they couldn't have this tradition. Like, you took this away from me? What? So the conspiracy theories are that they took it away to go ahead and completely take out the cocaine, because there was still some cocaine in there when it was supposed to be taken out way back like in 1914. Yeah. Conspiracy theory number one. Conspiracy theory number two, that they went ahead and changed the recipe. So I think Marrakesh was saying it, something very similar, that they went ahead and used high fructose corn syrup as opposed to using sugar because it's a cheaper alternative. But, you know, high fructose corn syrup can lead to diabetes, obesity, but they made that change anyway. Yep. There's another conspiracy theory regarding that they added more salt to it, because if there's more salt in the drink, it'll make you thirsty to drink even more. Those are all conspiracy theories. There's another one regarding like the Steppen company that Mo was mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
How, you know, like it's kind of Coca-Cola has all this authority to actually use coca leaves in the United States, and they're in cahoots with the Stepan company. So Coca-Cola had the law changed so that they can get even more coca leaves from Stepan. So it's crazy. It's like a rat's nest of conspiracy theories revolving around this time in 1985, from New Coke to from old Coke to New Coke, and then back to having both of them until they ultimately discontinued New Coke in 2002.
Yeah. And it's just to piggyback on your point about just tweaking a product that someone considers, you know, an institution. They mentioned, I think it was Fritos, and then how they adjusted, they said a very, very minor adjustment, but then it changed the color of the Fritos when they did that. And they said it didn't really change anything else, but then people were confused and they're looking at like, what is this? So they actually had to change the way they cooked them or baked them or whatever. So it looked like they were almost burnt because it looked similar to what the original product was. So that's how people are, maybe they don't say it until they try the new product, but they were so kind of used to that. And especially with Coke, something that's, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, there's not many drinks that have been around for 140 years or whatever it's been. So, I mean, no, it really is an institution.
No, leaning in on your point, Mo, like the reason it had been proven time and time again that you can't trick the consumers that much, especially if they consume your product all the time. They'll know, like, if there's something off. They'll know if there's a different flavor, if it looks different. And the examples that they gave were the one that you just talked about, Mo, with Frito-Lay. There was also an example with Funyuns, how there was a dye taken out of the recipe, and it, like, you know, it looked weird to people, and like, this is not my Funyun, you know, and they got bonkers. Yeah. They got crazy over it, and then they had to make a change or go back to this dye, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
And then I just wanted to go back a little bit because Noelle, Farm Girl Scavenger, had a point. She was asking about the tie between, I believe I lost now, but she said, how are Mormons tied, or the Mormon church tied to Coca-Cola? Now, this I don't remember hearing, but I just looked it up really fast. There is, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I believe, according to Wikipedia, it says they are not supposed to consume caffeinated beverages. That's one thing. But in terms of the ownership of Coca-Cola, I believe that some people say that there's a major, you know, stakeholder. Some people have taken a major stake in the Coca-Cola, like stock-wise in the company. So that is probably the tie in terms of shares. I mean, you're talking about a behemoth of a company. And it says here 64% of its shares are held by over 1,400 different institutional and mutual fund owners. So to figure out, and I think it says a mere 1% of the holding Coca-Cola's company stock would be worth over $3 billion. So you're talking about a giant behemoth of a company.
Blue chip stock right there. I own one stock of Coca-Cola. I think I have one of Pepsi. I have to check, but I do own one share. You know what I mean? Like, it's a blue chip company, like an IBM or like, you know, one of the automobile companies, like a blue chip original kind of U.S. company kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and if you're talking, you know, if we're going there, if we're talking about in terms of different value, I mean, I was trying to look up like what the value is compared to Coke seems to have a heart. They're worth a lot more right now. See, globally speaking, Coca-Cola heads the brand valuation game, ranking number 6 compared to 29 for Pepsi on Forbes' World's Most Valuable Brands. This is of 2019. Coca-Cola also enjoys higher market capitalization on stock market with $204.87 billion versus $159 billion. For Pepsi as at the end of 2019. So that kind of gives you an idea about the size of, we're talking about, you know, top 20 companies in the world, top 50 companies, whatever it is, but it's huge.
And this competition is still continuing till today, and between Coke and Pepsi, of course, as Mo just said, Coke is definitely way up, you know, beyond Pepsi, but they own products since nowadays folks are more concerned with their health and wellness. It talks about this in the podcast. Like, yes. I think Coke owns Smartwater, and like Pepsi owns Naked Juice, and like these more health conscious products, but they're still, you know, competing. Like whenever you buy your products that you take home, especially any drinks, look in the back and it'll say whether Pepsi owns it or Coca-Cola owns it. Definitely, you know,
I'm drinking from a Taco Bell cup right here.
There you go. There you go. So Mo, in wrapping up, like for the last, like, you know, maybe 15 minutes now, what are your associations with soda, like from when you were a kid to adulthood now, and you know, you're a family man now?
It's funny you say that. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to drink soda. I mean, I did from time to time, like birthday parties, that kind of stuff, like Christmas, whatever. Other than that, we weren't allowed to have soda in the house. So up until we moved to US, 11, 12, even after that, when I was in high school, my mom, she kind of laxed everything once we got into high school. But two things she stressed on. She was really afraid of sugar content. So she didn't like, soda was number one on her hit list. And number two was microwaves. She didn't like microwaves. She said it destroyed the food. Use a stove, use that. So yeah, for me, I consume a lot more soda now. Like, and I shouldn't, to be honest, because I actually had, wasn't an uncle, but some family friend who worked, I believe, for Pepsi. And he was like a pretty decent, you know, pretty high up there. So he, I remember he would always say, whenever we saw him, one or two times I saw him, he said, don't touch any kind of soda of any kind. I don't care if it's Coke or Pepsi. And he couldn't say, he said, I can't stress it enough. Just drink water. You want to drink tea if you want, or coffee, because those are all better than any kind of soda, no matter if it's, you know, diet this or zero that. Or so anyway, that's my association with Pepsi. Drink way too much of it now. I don't drink regular Coke. One thing I would say is I can't really handle the taste of a regular Pepsi or a regular Coke. It's far too, not just sweet, like a regular, and you know, Coke is a huge, you know, everyone loves it, but for me, regular Coke is way too, it hits you way too hard. It's really fizzy. And there is a big, I think Marrakesh mentioned it, high fructose corn syrup, which is in a lot of anything sweet, especially in the US. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is banned in a lot of places in the world, or maybe the amount you could put in is banned. Not so much here. For example, ketchup. We have it in our US ketchup. German Heinz ketchup. And in Germany, doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. So there's give, and it's all down to, they talk about in the podcast, the rumors about why they changed. You know, one of the rumors is about being able to add high fructose corn syrup in because it's cheaper than regular sugar. So, I mean, what about you? I know you don't drink soda now. Did you ever, or like even as a kid, or?
You know, Mo, when we talk about these things that we've grown up with, like for me, soda always had, like when I think soda, traditionally, like it's always been like a family drink, like something you do together with the family at parties. And, you know, when we were younger, my mom, she was a big Sprite fan. I forget who owned Sprite. I don't know if it's Pepsi or Coca-Cola, but she would always like, Sprite was kind of like an after dinner kind of drink, like kind of a sweet drink after dinner. So I've always had those associations with soda, you know. Currently, present day, adult, my adult Paul, I do not drink soda. I try to be very health conscious. I drink water. I really don't drink any juices. The only time I drink soda is like if I go to a bar, and I don't even drink alcohol, but if I go to a bar and it's like a party thing, and like there's like you have to buy drinks, then I'll buy soda there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, associations with soda as a kid, like I said, family together. And now as an adult, as a 45-year-old adult, I do not drink soda. I don't recommend anyone drink soda. This because like what you were, your family member said.
My mom can't stand it.
Yeah, it's just, it causes diabetes, obesity. I'm talking about like if you have this regularly, it could rot your teeth. And I think it's just a bad habit to get into. You know what I'm saying? You know, these days I'm all about like my bad habits and whatnot. Like I'm paying attention to them. If you knew me personally, I'm very neurotic about like, I even mark the calendars when I go into these bad patterns. So I'm super neurotic about it because I'm just really trying to examine my own bad habits, bad patterns. But I don't recommend anyone who's worried about their health. I do not recommend you drink soda unless, like I said, you're in a social setting and you don't drink alcohol. That's what I do, definitely. Yeah. I don't even drink carbonated water. It messes with your indigestion. Like,
and you I never understood carbonated, and especially the unsweetened. Like, I don't get it.
No, but what I'm saying is carbonated drinks, like soda is carbonated. That fizz, it's carbonated. Yeah. I'm talking about even like, what's that? That kombucha, like, kombucha drink, like even that, like where people think, oh, this is so healthy, this is so healthy. But dude, like that carbonated drink, that those anything that's fizzy, when you drink it, it messes with your digestion. So I just stay away from all that. Water all day. It's good for your skin. You know what I'm saying? And it just it's good. It animates one. You know what I'm saying? So yeah.
Oh yeah. I drink more water than anything else. I do. I'm not gonna lie. I do drink soda. I shouldn't. One, I guess, off point. I remember we were in Vegas with my kids 2 or 3 years ago, and there's a giant Pepsi, no, Coke, excuse me, the giant Coke bottle store thing. So if you go in there, you go to the top floor, there's, it says Cokes of the World. And of course, anytime I see anything weird like that, I'm like, okay, we got to try it. So it's like you spend like 10 bucks or something like that, and you get like 20 different little Dixie cups of soda from different parts of the world, like Uganda, Argentina, the UK. And they are all, and even the regular Cokes, I'd say they're all different. So when you talked about marketing and taste testing and all of that, and they had things like, had like mango lychee flavored Sprite. They had like fruit I hadn't even heard of, jackfruit soda, and like all this kind of, so, I mean, it's not good, but from what I could tell, you know, both Coke and Pepsi, they really looked at whatever country it was and made whatever that is for that. I thought it was
super. No, I think that's I think that's totally fantastic. It's true. Like you said, like, what are the ingredients that we have locally here that we can produce a cola that will go ahead and we can sell it, and, you know, it'll be the cheapest that we can sell it, so we can make a big turnaround. The thing that I just get with all these companies, these really big companies, is they'll kind of sell something and push something. I don't think that'll be, I wouldn't even say that, but they push and sell products that, not every big company, but that could potentially be harmful to people over a period of time, but they'll still push it to make a dollar. And that is kind of scary. You know what I'm saying? And so the people, and I always say this, that people don't think that, you know, I'm talking crazy here, but like, I'm not one that really votes, but I really still do feel that people have a strong voice in making change. And I always believe that when a lot of people make us think about something, change can happen. And these big companies, they'll go ahead and push products on us, even if it has a harmful ingredient that's not harmful in the beginning, but it could be harmful over time. They'll still push that at us. And like I said, I think it's important when the people, they do speak up and make us think and say something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, voting, I mean, it can't be. I would say that whenever there's a big argument, I don't care what you're talking about, especially the bigger the better, I would always say follow the dollar, follow the money. Because if, like you said, you vote with your feet, vote with your wallet, regardless of what we're talking about. You know, I prefer Pepsi over Coke or whatever, who cares? But I mean, that's going to, I mean, if in 19, whatever it was, Coke didn't sell anything, we might not even be talking about them right now. If people didn't like the taste back then or whatever, they wouldn't be around now. Imagine how many companies tried. We're talking about Coke and Pepsi. I guarantee you there was like we said, that other Spanish brand, Coca, I think it was Coca-Cola Coca or something like that. What if they stayed around? What if they, instead of selling the Coca-Cola, they, you know, push their own thing? You know, you never know. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things. Yeah, it always works by following the money, I would say. But
and then Farm Girl Scavenger Noel, thank you so much for being in the building. Thank you for going ahead and rocking with us for this live podcast here. And I'm not disagreeing that kombucha is super healthy. I mean, avocado is super healthy, but it's full of saturated fat, and that could over time give you a heart attack. You know what I mean? So check out carbonated water or any kind of carbonated drink, any kind of fizzy drink, and just Google it being good for your digestion or not. It's true. It's fermented. It does have probiotics in a sense, but like I said, it being carbonated and those fizzies messes with the acids in your stomach that's supposed to break down food. So I just say Google it and do, you know, look into it, and then maybe we can have a discussion regarding that. But I do agree that aluminum is horrible. Any kind of deodorants that you buy, folks, check the labels on the deodorants. Make sure that there isn't aluminum inside of it.
Recently, actually, I didn't even know what to think.
Yeah, like you go to Whole Foods or like they have spray. Like I use a spray deodorant. Like it's like a, and it doesn't have any aluminum inside of it. Definitely.
Yeah. You know?
But saturated. Yeah. Like I said, avocados are good for you too. But saturated fat that's in nuts and avocado, especially if you have a heart condition, I do not recommend avocados, coconut oil, or even nuts because they're super high in saturated fat, and those can give you a heart attack over time. Just look into it. I guess don't take my word for it. Look into it. But we're getting into a whole the argument.
Sounds like another show. I think we're gonna have to do what we're gonna, especially me, because I all this stuff goes. I need to eat better, definitely. But all of this stuff. But I mean, I've tried kombucha once. It's pretty potent. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, it is, and I've tried it as well. I used to drink it like all the time until I really found out about that. Yeah, kombucha. It is.
It really gets like, you. I mean,
you get
first time
you try it. Face.
It's like okay. So I actually thought when I was drinking it the first time, and I got it from I opened it right in the grocery store, and it was kind of like okay, is this off? Is it bad? I mean, like that was my original reaction. And then I asked somebody, no, that's good. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good. That's how it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to taste like the shit. No, I'm joking.
No, we're not knocking kombucha. I've only had it once that one time. And that was only because I didn't. Yeah. But I mean, yeah. So, I mean, as far as other things go though, in terms of like going back to like worse drinks, say like fizzy drinks, my history with that, like I said, it's funny. My first, I would say 11, 12 years, very little soda. Now, maybe because I have made, let's say, bad life choices, dietary choices recently. So, to be honest, I don't really like soda as much though. I mean, I'd be interested to know how much regular soda people drink here. Like, do you like soda? I'm not talking about like, you know, other stuff, but like soda, like Coke, Pepsi, Sprite, you know, Fanta, all of these guys. I mean, do you consume those more? Or do you consume like water, tea, coffee? For me, it's probably more water, tea, coffee.
Yeah. I think water, tea, coffee are, you know, like I said, more people are more health conscious. This is what's being promoted. Like you see all the meat alternatives, Beyond Meat, and McDonald's has a plant-based meat. Burger King, plant-based meat, you know what I'm saying? Exactly. So I think that being promoted is making people make different choices. It's kind of like the cool thing right now. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of us, and you know, myself included, we're lemmings, like whatever sometimes the news says is like, okay, yeah. It's like right now, everybody get vaccinated because vaccination. So yeah, I got to get vaccinated, you know what I mean? But like no one knows the results of that, but like I said, that's a future podcast, you know, for us.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think actually Farm Girl Scavenger, she did have a good point though. In terms of homemade, homegrown, home fermented, that kind of stuff. But I mean that would be if we could all do that, if we could all farm our own stuff, I think that would probably be the best. Totally appreciate your comments though. I mean, sure. No soda for you. Yeah, I mean, diet soda. Actually, it's funny that she brings up diet soda. Diet soda, that was the question I asked. I told you that I had like a family friend that worked for the Pepsi company. And then I think somebody there said, oh, what about diet soda? That's good for you. He said, no, actually, that's probably worse for you.
I think there were studies like aspartame is like the sugar alternative that's used in diet sodas. Put like holes in your brain or something like that, like some crazy thing like that. Yeah. So the diet sodas. No, dude. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Home. Yeah. I can get down with, you know, to be honest, I need to move away from any kind of that, you know, not just the sugar, not just all of it together. So whatever the key components are not good for you, but we are running close to an hour. So I want to give a big thanks to Paul, and I appreciate everyone's comments too. Whether you agree with this or don't agree with this, I really enjoy reading all your comments. And if you want to leave a comment later, please do. Tell me I'm wrong. I will happily read your comment.
Absolutely. We love the comments. We love the interaction. You know, a lot of times I know personally I put out podcasts and information because I want to connect with other people and I want to have this discussion. So the fact that all you guys showed up and, you know, commented, fantastic. Please join us again. Same bad time, same bad channel next week for sure, you know?
Yeah. And then real quick, let us know where we can find that good stuff, Paul. Where's your content?
Oh, as always, Mo, thank you so much for inviting me onto the podcast. I sincerely do mean that. I'm not saying that for show. You don't have to have me on. You have a lot of other reseller folks and friends you can have on, and you choose to have me on. So I really appreciate you for inviting me to your show. And in closing, my latest podcast episode talks about, hey, thank you so much, Marrakesh. Thank you for coming. The latest podcast talk episode that I have right now is, it talks about how being unattractive is actually working for you. So all my ugly people, like, tune in and check out this podcast. And even if you're not ugly and you just look average, check it out. Exactly. So that is the latest podcast. You can find it at improveandhavefun.com. And once again, my name is Paul V. Perez, and it's been a pleasure being here on this Taco Tuesday, No Hat Tuesday with Mo.
That's right. I want to thank Paul. I also want to thank everyone in the chat, Noel, Marrakesh 7, everybody else that was here, Louis, who else? I think Yaakov was here earlier. So thank you for the questions and comments. That's the lifeblood of the show. And if you want to catch me, you can catch us on this YouTube channel, Facebook, Reseller Niche Help Group, or Instagram, Reseller_Niche. But until the next one, thank you so much for being here. Have a good one, guys. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Reseller Niche Podcast. Show notes and social media links are located at resellerniche.com. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.